It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the cinemas and on DVD. Get ready for...
Wait for it!
Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Sozi!
No, that's Matthew Sozi.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever. Yeah.
Let's find out how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Sozi.
People seem to like me because I am polite and I'm rarely late.
Hello there, film lovers, and welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org.
And you can now follow him on Twitter.
Yes, I'm on the Twitter.
He is on the Twitter.
And I'm also on Facebook. Yep. I'm still learning Twitter, but I've put a few things out there.
I tweeted you a cool thing yesterday.
I'll have to look for it.
Yeah.
I've been busy. Mm-hmm. So anyway, msocey at WFYI.org, also on Facebook and the Twitter. And the show is available as a podcast. And it's also available on iTunes. And we also have a blog, which we will hopefully update now that the drive is over.
I haven't done anything.
Which we can you can check out at
filmsociology.tumblr.com.
The man whose voice you just heard, excited about the Pacer playoffs.
Oh, thrilled!
That's Kobe Slagle.
Yes, hello, hello.
Our guest, excited about the Magic playoffs. That would be Christopher Lloyd of the Film Yap. Turn his mic on. What the hell's wrong with you?
There it is.
Hey, Chris.
Here. I am, in fact, an Orlando native, although in this go-around, I'm afraid I am rooting for the Pacers.
Oh, look at that.
Well, wow. I mean, they got no Dwight Howard. Ido Turkoglu's been injured.
Wait, Dwight's out?
Dwight Howard? Yeah, spine surgery.
Oh, dang.
Yeah, Bill Walton was talking about that on a certain station I was listening to. But remember, according to one caller in Chicago, Dwight Howard, overrated.
He is overrated. Yeah. I wouldn't trade for him.
No, not at all. Yes, let's remind us. Yeah, you can't because you can't have a superstar in order to win. Wait, who was the last team to win a championship without a headline superstar?
You have any?
That would be the 2004 Pistons.
Do you realize how much mileage you've gotten out of that bit this week?
3 miles.
Oh my god! Oh my god!
That is true about the Pistons. Although, I mean,
they
had like four guys on their roster who had been all stars at some point.
Right, but not a massive super duper star. And then before that, the 1979 Sonics.
In fact, I think the year that's another good one. But I think the year after Detroit won the championship, so that would have been the 2005 season. I believe they had four guys in the All Star game. So.
Yeah.
Not exactly like they had. They did not have that one, you know.
No, they didn't have a Dwight Howard, a Jordan,
no
a Kobe,
A-list
a Tim
stars,
Duncan.
But they had several B-list
right.
stars.
The Pacers, of course, have Tyler Hansbrough.
That's right.
And you're not actually misdialed into the NBA sports talk radio show.
Can you guys keep it down? Because I'm staring at the current Piston roster and I'm sobbing, okay?
You can buy season tickets starting now for next year. Oh, not even now. They went on sale like last week. Season's still going on. You can buy next year's tickets.
Yep. Well, you can always be certain, though, that the Pistons will be better than the Bobcats.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, yeah. That's a whole...
There is that. See?
There is that. See? There's one thing we can all agree on.
Yep.
that Michael Jordan is a terrible executive.
He is an executive about as well as he dresses.
He also has terrible... he makes terrible mustache choices.
Yes.
As well.
Zeke Heil. Mm.
He's got Zig style.
Oh, by the way, thank you to everybody who... we met our goal.
We
met our goal early this year. Thanks to everybody who contributed at WFYI.org or called 800-233-0020.
There's still time, though, if you want to make a pledge and put in your why you give that Kobe Slagel is cooler and better looking than Matt Soze, I'll still take you to Gats.
It still hasn't happened yet, huh?
No, it hasn't. No, it has not happened.
Not even by Bee Dryer at...
not even by Bee Dryer.
There's a reason, sir. Look... I'll tell you what. We'll talk about new movies, and you can go record Lloyd Wright or hang out or something. So.
I'll bet. I'll get this thing. Roll a trailer, and then I'll.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, do that.
Which trailer? We have Pirates.
We got Pirates here.
Okay. We're gonna talk about a couple of films that just. Oh well, Safe, the new Jason Statham film. Then we have a Pope. Not the Pope Must Diet. The 5-year engagement with Jason Segel and Emily Blunt. Mike Perry is angry about that. And we have the latest from Aardman. Animations. It's Pirate! ! Band of Misfits, and we have the voices of Hugh Grant, Salma Hayek, Imelda Staunton.
Ooh.
And steady. You're a big Imelda Staunton fan, huh?
No, Selma.
She Brandon is
Gleason,
feisty.
Anthony
Brendan
Gleeson.
Yep. So, play the trailer.
When tales are told of pirates, their vicious nature. And their ruthless ways. One pirate is more feared than them all.
Avast! I'm the pirate captain. And I'm here for your gold.
Gold? Afraid we don't have any gold, old man. This is a leper boat. See?
Behind every captain is a crew.
Land ho!
Sorry! Sure, some of you are as ugly as a sea cucumber. Some of you are closer to being a chair or coat rack than a pirate. And some of you are just fish I've dressed up in a hat.
Hoist the flag!
Standard, sir?
Or gruesome!
Extra gruesome! Let's make their gizzards shake!
We're having a little trouble with pirates, Your Majesty.
I hate pirates!
Ha! We laugh in the face of danger.
I don't
really like danger at all.
An actual pirate?
Obviously. Duh.
Can we get there?
Well, yes. But unfortunately, there's this dirty great sea monster in the way.
I think they just add those onto maps for decoration.
Is that a fact?
See? I told you!
The pirates. Band of Misfits.
Ha! I'm the pirate captain, and the
ghost ship.
Okay, the Pirates, Band of Misfits. Of course, this is from the gang that gave us Wallace and Gromit, Flushed Away. Was it Alex Christmas?
Might have been. Peter Lord is the director. His
yes.
last feature film was Chicken Run.
Ah, yes,
years
Chicken
ago.
Run. Love Chicken Run. And this is more of a return to claymation style as opposed to the last couple of features.
It is and it isn't. It looks like it. They're doing a lot of some really cool clay puppetry, claymation, whatever you want to call it, for the stop motion animation. But they've also married it to some very slick CGI for like the backgrounds.
Okay.
And it's blended together very seamlessly. So this is a great, great looking movie. I was contrasting it even with Coraline, which is I thought a very good stop motion film from just 3 years ago.
And that was actually worth watching in 3D as well.
Yeah. And the visuals in this really blow Coraline away, I thought.
Wow.
Just in terms of how well they're done. Unfortunately, the story is just really not there. It's based on a series of books, the first couple of books in that series, I think it was Dan Gideon,
okay.
If I've got that right, who also did the screenplay. And it just kind of feels like that, like they just sort of picked and plucked story elements from different things and just threw them in a pot and made a gumbo. And the end result, it doesn't have a through line. It doesn't have that feeling of continuity to it. Really great vocal cast, as you were mentioning there. My biggest compliment I can give to Hugh Grant doing the voice of the pirate captain. That's his only name. It's just the
right.
pirate captain. Biggest compliment I can give him is I had no idea it was Hugh Grant until I saw his name in the end credits.
That's nice to know.
Yeah.
Because you can't – can anybody name the last thing Hugh Grant's done in the last 5 years?
Didn't he do something where like he plays like an aging pop star?
Well, that was Music and Lyrics. I think that was even further than 5 years.
What's
so
that? Wow.
Yeah, him and Drew Barrymore.
How? From the top to the not so
well. That's anyway.
Not so close to the top.
Right. So I was wondering, are there as many, because you mentioned Peter Lorre's last film was Chicken Run, which is one of my favorites, and that had so many little winks and homages to films like The Great Escape and Papillon and Stalag 17. Are there a lot of pirate tweaks in this one, whether it's Pirates of the Caribbean or,
I would say,
well,
not,
nothing else?
Not to other pirate movies, you know, maybe like, you know, going further back like
Errol
Captain
Flynn.
Blood, and,
okay.
Yeah, that kind of stuff. And it's more like you know inspiration as opposed to like explicit homages. There's a lot of fun stuff. There's some interesting characters. The setup is that it's supposed to be 1840 something, I think, which you know is very very late in the pirate era.
And of course we hear the Ramones on the soundtrack.
Yeah, not quite that late in the pirate thing, but. Yeah, and so the pirate captain is upset that you know they're like sea lift pirates, you know, that their booty is not bountiful and they're upset about it, and the captain's in the running for Pirate of the Year and for 20 years and has never won it.
Oh.
So they have all sorts of adventures, and then he meets Charles Darwin on his trips to the island there, and they end up having some crazy wacky adventures and the. You know, back in the hot spot with Queen Victoria, who's very, very opposed to pirates in general. And
like I say, voiced by Imelda Staunton.
Yeah, it's just sort of a weird mashup. The story doesn't quite work there. There's a lot of great elements to it. They have this silent monkey servant of Charles Darwin who communicates only through title cards. Like in his case, they're literally like playing cards with words on them, and he pulls them out and flips through them with, you know, very Buster Keaton-ish expressions on his face. So a lot of fun stuff there, but just doesn't quite make it over the top for me to recommend.
What if you have a young one with you?
I would say so. Probably in that sweet spot, you know, between that like 5 to 9 age.
Okay.
Probably older than that, they would probably find it a little too kiddie-ish. Younger than that, they might find it a little too hard to follow, but yeah.
Okay. So there's that. Now, we also have a film opening today, and it's called Delicacy, and it's the latest from Audrey Tautou, who I think is never going to age.
Is it Tautou? Is that how it's pronounced?
T-A-T. Pardon our French, literally.
Tautou?
No, I know it's not that. That's a whole different thing. But it's a French woman who meets the man of her dreams, and then, well, loses him, and then she has to go on with life. So here's a little trailer, because we love playing French foreign film trailers in general.
I will be your eyes so you can see the morning light, the world around me, and the day would feel too tight. I close my eyes and keep you in my heart.
Natalie had everything she ever dreamed of, until one moment took it all away. Now, she's about to discover that after the one, there might be one more.
Entrez.
Bonjour.
Spring. Audrey Tautou stars in a new romantic comedy about life, love, and other delicacies. Delicacy.
Okay, but I'm sorry, I have to bring this up. From now on, ladies and gentlemen, thanks to Chris Lloyd, we should only refer to Pretty Woman as the hooker movie, because that's what happens when you see enough films. Titles come and go, but descriptions always stay.
Well, you know, a secret that I do not necessarily conceal is I have a terrible memory for names and titles of movies.
Mm-hmm.
It actually hurt me worse in my career when I was first starting out in the pre-internet age. But you know, now anywhere I'm near a computer or mobile device, I can just always go to IMDb and find names of things. But unfortunately, on the cuff, yeah, I often have to use my own shorthand for movies.
And that's why you have nerdy people surrounding you that could probably pick up the title immediately.
Exactly.
So. Okay, Delicacy. Now, I remember reading in your write-up, which you can check out at the Film Yap, you said this film is very French. How is it very French?
Because, if it were made in America, it would very much be considered a romantic comedy.
Yes.
And even though there are definitely funny, wistful moments in this, there's that undertow of tragedy that just seems to be genetically encoded in all French movies. Like, you know, so I would call it more of a romantic drama, even though there are some fun elements to it.
Now, as you heard from the bouncy score in the trailer, yes, a boy meets girl, and boy and girl have montage, and and then boy dies in a bad accident, and then the last 2/3 of the film is Audrey Tito adjusting to life as a widow, diving into work, and then meeting what looks like the Icelandic Rice Ifans at work. and then there's a boss that has feelings for her, and then there's a coworker, and it's just adjusting to a new stage in her life. Lots of shots of people walking as well. I think if you took the walking shots, this film would be about 70 minutes long.
Yeah, and the boss, I'm not sure I would say he has feelings for her so much as he has vibrations south of the border for her.
Make a run for the border.
Yeah.
So, but it's funny because your term very French was in my head as I was watching this, and I kept thinking, if they remade this, well, I think I've actually Hilary Swank and P.S. I Love You. It was something. But I'm like, okay, this could happen. This would be dumbed down a little more. This montage would be here. That, you know. And I thought, and then there'd be two really overqualified older actors playing the parents.
Yeah, I guess here's how I would describe that, you know, why I think it's so French is, like I say, if this story was made in America, people would recognize this as being a piffle. It's like, oh, it's just something fun and frothy and romantic.
Right.
And, you know, and there's nothing wrong with it. I think the French just, you know, they take themselves so seriously when it comes to their art and when it comes to their cinema that they can't make, you know, they can't bring themselves to make a piffle. So they have to have something. They feel like they have to throw some profundity into the goings on, and I think that's what's going on here.
And this is not an American film, so Audrey doesn't have a sidekick.
Yes, no sidekick.
No Eve Arden.
No wing woman.
Right.
to me, the thing that was most interesting about this movie is it's sort of a contemplation on beauty and, you know, a very beautiful person being in love with a not so beautiful person, and
nothing wrong with that.
And of course, the flip side of that being that usually in movies you see that being the other way around in terms of the genders. And here you have the very beautiful and very iconically beautiful Audrey. Say it again.
Tito.
I'll take your word for it. That's how it's pronounced.
And the dude I refer to is the Icelandic Rice Ifans,
who's a Danish comic actor.
Right. Or he's Swedish. I'm sorry. He's supposed to be Swedish.
But
in
the character's
film,
Swedish. The actual actor, I think, is Danish.
Sorry, which, friends of Scandinavia.
Yeah, I was going to say. Unfortunately, it's all the same to most of us here in America. and you know, as I put in my review, the guy is not actually like a bridge troll or something. I mean, he's not like repulsive.
None of us are.
But, you know, he's not classically handsome, and they go out of their way to accentuate that in the movie, dressing him in, like, very drab, nerdy clothes.
Yes.
And he's got this male balding pattern that just sort of looks like he's got mange, and they play up his awkwardness.
Right.
And so it's like, you know, can a woman who's so beautiful fall for a man who's so not? And they go out of their way.
Chris and I can both say yes.
Yeah, yes. Speaking from that end of the aisle, we very much hope that this is possible, at least in the cinematic world. So yeah, and there's this whole, you know, like basically everyone who meets him in connection with her is just put off, and in some sense, almost in case of that boss who wanted her for himself, angry. Like, how can you be with someone like that when you are deserving of someone so much more beautiful?
Yeah, and there's scenes where, and then there is a little bit of ups and downs between the two of them, and so it is, you know, it's not a long film, but it feels like it takes its time to develop they go out as friends, and then things happen, and then there's bumps along the way that, yes, I'm saying, if this was an American film, it would be really ham-fisted and really heavy,
yeah.
Even for a romantic comedy.
Katherine Heigl would definitely be the star.
Yes, yes. And but it's just the right tone, dare we say French tone, to of being able to have layers and nuances. And again, this is not you know, best foreign film material or best screenplay material, but it's a subject matter that we could see we have seen done before, and it's done pretty well. Yeah. It's not monumental, it's not earth shattering, but it's a good 90 minutes.
Definitely engaging. Like I say, if you're into this sort of thing, I don't think you'll be disappointed at all.
When do you think Audrey's going to age?
She's probably look at Julia Roberts. I mean, Julia
in
Roberts
the Hooker
is about,
movie.
Is about 10 years older than her, and she seems to be holding up pretty well.
So, yeah, it's because we were talking about Amelie. It's been, I think, a decade since Amelie came out. And then, you know, she became the Euro manic pixie dream girl. Thank you, The Onion. it's funny. She, even when she's doing something drab like her, you know, her one attempt at Hollywood with the Da Vinci Code, she's, you know, still bright and cheery. And
she was born with elfin features, and you just can't – you never – she's
pixie.
Like Audrey Hepburn. You just never lose that.
So – Keep holding on, girl. All right, we're going to move on to The Raven, which is not a remake of the Boris Karloff, Jack Nicholson, Roger Corman thing. It's this time John Cusack is Edgar Allan Poe, and Edgar Allan Poe apparently went to the crime-fighting school of Sherlock Holmes. We'll see. Here we go.
Dear God. Get the inspector.
This crime is familiar to me.
Edgar Allan Poe.
To what may I attribute the honor of your call? The night before last, a young girl and her mother were found murdered. The daughter's body was lodged in a chimney. The mother's head severed with a straight razor. You're referring to one of my stories, a work of fiction. I'm afraid I am not. Do you actually think that I murdered these people?
What cannot be disputed is that your imagination is the inspiration of a horrendous crime.
I love you, Edgar.
Be careful.
I believe the killer is taunting us.
I challenge the brilliant detective mind of Edgar Allan Poe, a game of wits. I will kill again, and on that new corpse, I will leave clues.
As unfortunate as this is, you may be uniquely qualified to cast light on our killer. The Pit and the Pendulum. Are there other stories in the collection? Specifically about murder.
I'm afraid so.
This killer is methodical. He wants us to know he's gonna strike again.
Stop! I dare you to try to save your beloved's life.
Where is she?
He will keep her alive to keep you involved. He's part of his game.
Emily.
I would gladly give my life for hers. I know you would.
I'll send you to hell! No matter how this ends, I will kill him.
Turn those up. Thanks, Cobb. It looks like Sherlock Holmes and like From Hell with Jack the Ripper, because Jack the Ripper was a horror movie. And and it's from the director of V for Vendetta, so Subtly is out.
Yeah, it's a really interesting concept, kind of a bold, slightly ridiculous concept.
Like the show.
But I thought it was pretty well executed. And John Cusack is obviously having fun in the role as Edgar Allan Poe repurposed as a hunter of serial killers.
Kind of like Abraham Lincoln will be repurposed as a hunter of vampires.
I got a feeling that thing better be more ridiculous than The Raven.
Yeah. This is very much taking itself seriously. And the plot plays out a lot like, you know, other serial killers taunting whoever's hunting
the pursuer,
In the Line of Fire or Seven. You sure. know, where they're dropping clues along with bodies along the
really,
way.
Really? Is there a Montiato in this? No. Is there a bird?
Is
there somebody named Lenore in it?
No, but there is a Griswold who I think is the first
Clark? Tom?
he's the first to die by the pendulum, and I won't give that
away.
Oh. And this is actually based on a real person, a literary adversary of Poe's, and his dying words are, "I'm only a critic."
Because critics are critical and people don't like us. Yeah. It's like Bob Balaban and Lady in the Water.
Yeah. You kind of have to like buy into this whole kind of, like I said, you know, hard to swallow setup. But once you do that, I thought the movie moved along very well. It was definitely engaging. It has a lot of really nice dialogue in it. Like there's this one line that, and Cusick does it really well. We said something like, you know, talking about the dark and forbidding melancholy that has followed me my whole life like a black dog, and some poetic kind of touches like that. I liked it. Now, I should, in the purposes of full disclosure, point out this movie is currently hitting at 19% on the tomato meter.
Ow.
At Rotten Tomatoes, making it, I think, one of the worst rated films of the year.
Well, it's early.
So I am definitely on the upside of this. In fact,
so it would have been 12 if it weren't for you.
Yeah, in fact, so far, myself and my friend Roger Moore is the critic down in Orlando for Tribune Media Services. Only two people I know who have actually given this a thumbs up at this point.
Well, no, you don't give thumbs up because you have to give Roger Ebert money.
Because Roger's, yeah.
Yeah. So no, if you pick up the non-Nouveau, you can see Roger's Moore's write-up. And, of course, check out the Film Yap for the full disclosure on that.
Actually, Nick Rogers
Nick did it.
Is going to be writing the review for that. You have to go to my blog to see my review.
Ah, okay.
And I actually do not know what Nick has written, so I will have to go to the Film Yap myself.
You'll be just as surprised as everyone else.
I think he was kind of more in the middle.
Okay. All right. So there you go. We got plenty of films for you to choose. One shameless plug in the MeTV saga. If you have 13.3, WTHR 13.3, or MeTV tomorrow night on Svengoolie, which, of course, Rich Coes, who we will have on the show again sometime fairly soon, tomorrow they are showing the Universal quote-unquote sci-fi classic This Island Earth, which, if you remember, fans of Mystery Science Theater, in Mystery Science Theater, the movie, the one cinematic feature that MST put out, this is the film they selected to be made fun of. And it has Russell Johnson, for you fans of Gilligan's Island, and aliens with really large foreheads. So that's worth checking out.
So are we going to talk about Safe? With Jason Statham, which of course was not screened.
Not screened for us, although somebody from the AP got it. And
I'm going to take a wild guess. There will be kicking.
If you check out Kevin Pollak's impression of Jason, it's pretty good.
There will be glare spots off of a bald head as he's whipping around the screen kicking people.
You're a bad dude because there's between, you know, Haywire comes out next week and she's going to come find you at the Y.
Oh, and as you pointed out, there will be lots of talking like this. You know,
he and Christian Bale have lunch.
It's not just those two guys. It's every action star in every movie that has come out over the last 15 years. They all do that. Why is that?
I want the Caesar salad.
I think we should do an entire show where everybody talks like this.
That would, I think, bore us after about 10 minutes.
Not to mention we'd all have to gargle afterwards.
That's true.
For sore throats.
Yes. All right, well, we're going to take a short break, and we're going to talk about what's new and what's old on DVD and Blu-ray. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org.
Yeah.
What?
Are either one of these any good?
I don't watch movies.
Well, have you heard anything about either one of them?
I find it's best to stay out of other people's affairs. You know who I can do without? I can do without the people in the video store.
Which ones?
All of them.
What would you get for a 6-year-old boy who chronically wets his bed?
So do you have any new movies in?
Do you have that one with that guy who was in that movie that was out last year?
They never rent quality flicks. They always pick the most intellectually devoid movie on the racks.
Ooh, Navy SEALs!
It's like in order to join, they have to have an IQ less than their shoe size.
Just go open the video store.
Yeah, open the video store!
Blockbuster Video! Wow, what a difference!
I like when Joe was on and we lost the video thing, and then he said that at the end. That was cool.
Joe Shearer?
Yeah.
He quotes Wesley Willis?
Well, yeah, because he got used to hearing Wesley at the end.
Crystal, you should really pick up some Wesley Willis on YouTube.
Wesley Willis.
In the film, I think we do this every week with our guests. If anything else, Wesley Willis's song Rock and Roll McDonald's appeared in Supersize Me.
Cool.
But fine musician from Chicago. Mm-hmm. Welcome back to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msoci@WFYI.org. Also on Facebook, hanging out with Christopher Lloyd of the Film Yap, hanging out with Kobe Slagle. We met our goal. Thank you to everybody for helping out on that. And in the shameless plug department, up in Anderson University tonight and tomorrow, Ron Johnston, who is the chair of the theater department, gave himself a 50th birthday present, the production of Give 'Em Hell, Harry, that he is playing as Harry Truman. Of course, James Whitmore did the movie back in 1975. But anyway, there's movie and stage. I always like to mix those. Kind of a light week of movie titles that came out this week on DVD and Blu-ray. There's two new titles, and we'll start with the action film Contraband, which stars Mark Wahlberg, Ben Foster, Giovanni Ribisi, Kate Beckinsale, J.K. Simmons, and it's a remake of an Icelandic, that's where Iceland came into my brain, action film.
I want to see Ribisi and Foster put in a room together for a scene and try to out-skeevy each other.
Skeeve Fest. And Mark Wahlberg plays a former runner of illegal things, and of course he's got a wife who's Kate Beckinsale, and a couple of kids, and he's out of the business until he's brought back in.
He pulled me back in.
Yeah, and Lucas Haas is in this film as well, so here's the trailer.
Oh, crap. Hang on. Here we go.
You were the best of the best, but the proudest day of my life was when you turned legit. You started a family, and you got out of the life.
What's going on?
Chris, come home. It's my brother.
What happened, Andy?
I was running something, and I dumped the package.
You know, when I stopped doing runs, you promised me you were going to stay out of this.
They're going to kill me.
They're not going to kill you.
I was hoping you understand it's family. Maybe we could work something out.
I'll give you 2 weeks. If not, I'm going to come after the both of you. I'll come asking your wife for it, your kid.
You think you're the only guy with a gun? Have you ever mentioned my wife and my kids again?
No, I'm done.
You know what's going to happen if you don't pay? You know the rules, right?
I got to try to fix this. Trust me. I know what I'm doing.
So what are we running?
Currency? 15 million on 4 stacks. It's like the size of a Mini Cooper. Where are you going to hide it?
Where is the faith?
Oh, I lost my stripes now. I got to start from scratch.
Have you ever been convicted of espionage, sedition, treason?
Together? They're running something on my ship. Could be big.
Takes money to make money.
Woo! Está bueno.
No, it's no bueno.
Say goodbye to your wife.
I'm coming. I'm coming for you. We're going to war. Here we go.
Open the container.
Where's my wife?
Tell him not to dump it in the water.
You will never find that money.
You're right there, Kobe.
Gangs running in the streets and guns and guys that got out of the game and they're back in the game, but they still got it and all this.
I think we got a keeper there. Yeah, it's kind of that's kind of how it is. And of course, you know, then when you go after Mark's family, then it's personal.
Yeah, yeah.
Then you don't want to do that.
There's going to be trouble.
There will be trouble. Like I said, this is a remake, I believe, of an Icelandic action film. I would like to see the original to see if it's anything different.
Well, and funny thing, I don't know if I've ever heard of this before, is the guy who was the star of the Icelandic movie, which is more like a drama, I think, than like an action thriller,
right?
Is the director of this movie.
Oh, that's the connection. Okay.
Yeah, it's very
interesting.
So imagine if, you know, Noomi Rapace, you know, was the director of the American version of Girl with a Dragon Tattoo.
Would it be shorter? No. I know certain scenes that would be shorter, but interesting. So, okay. Yeah, this is one of those, I'm glad I rented it, but I think the less you think about it, the more you probably will enjoy it, even though it's a tired storyline.
Yeah, it's you know, it's a star vehicle for Mark Wahlberg.
Who's an executive producer on this as well.
Yeah, and I think it's a good one. I think he's one of these actors, unlike, say, a Nicolas Cage. Wahlberg has become very good at judging what movies will work for him and his star persona and his acting style.
It fits to him.
Yeah, and so this is something, you know, he plays the underdog, you know, the man of confidence who, you know, doesn't feel a need to be to brag about it, but you know he can come in and do his thing and be nearly unstoppable at whatever it is that he does. In this case, it's hide stuff and steal stuff. Yeah, the story's kind of all over the place. You know, then he ends up going. The whole deal is his cousin or his brother.
His brother-in-law gets him in the business, and he gets beat up by Giovanni Ribisi. And
or actually, I think he beats up Giovanni Ribisi.
That's not good either.
Well, I think they beat each other up. They're beating each other.
Yeah.
I do have to say, so the whole setup is that, like, you've got to pay for your brother-in-law's debt, or I'll hurt you and your family. So then he goes down to Panama or South America, and it's on this whole big long scam that ends up becoming a scam within a scam. And I do have to say that, you know, if I was him and faced in that situation where you've got this mobster guy threatening your wife and kids, probably the best solution is not to leave the country and leave your wife alone with the mobster guy.
Yeah, or with Ben Foster for
or
that
matter. Ben Foster.
Here's a note, folks. Stop casting Ben Foster in these roles because he's starting to become the Liev Schreiber of his generation. Don't cast very obvious actors that look like they are capable of turning by the second half or the two-thirds of the way through the movie. So Ben, go sit with Liev and find something else to do.
Yeah.
I like Ben Foster. I just wish he could do something else.
He's been really good in a lot of things. And I have to say, unfortunately, because of the way he looks, he's kind of destined to always be in supporting roles.
Or sharing billing, like something like The Mechanic or The Messenger.
The Messenger is a good example. I do have to say, you know, this is one of those stories where you look at the construction of it. So this guy, who's supposed to be, you know, a very cagey guy, this Mark Wahlberg character, faced with this situation, like, okay, I've got this guy threatening my family. So should I go do this big, long, huge, complicated scam and hope that it works out so I can pay him back? Or would it be easier and cleaner and probably smarter to just shoot the guy?
But then the movie would only be 10 minutes.
Yes, then the movie would be about 10 minutes long, and we wouldn't get to see some great Giovanni Ribisi and Ben Foster scenes.
You know what? It feels like Ribisi is like the poor man's Johnny Depp. It's like every character he does, he has to find some way of making him odd and bizarre. It's just that Ribisi doesn't have enough money to buy his own island.
Yeah, yeah. And he's one of those characters, actors that's out there that I really like his stuff, but he does seem to be self-selecting roles that...
Well, and I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, he gets offered the role and none of the voice twitch quirks are obviously in the script, so he creates that.
Right.
Okay, that's fine, but...
I think it's still an effective movie. I enjoyed it. You know, it's one of those movies that just the momentum of the plot kind of carries it along. And like I say, it's a good star vehicle for Wahlberg.
So flip your brains off on this one. You got something? No?
Yeah, well...
What? You can't. We need more. Apparently,
do we? I know we do need more.
We need some mediocre things. We need some mediocre ones.
That's what this show needs: is mediocrity.
Dude, I think we do that every Friday at 5. every Friday at 5 on HD2.
How about...
It's also an art film.
Last 5 minutes of the show just brainstorming ad-libs and see if you know it.
That or just, now that the pledge drive is over, we should just hunker down here in the HD2 bunker and start...
It's dumb.
It's not dumb. It's just a little brainless, that's all. He doesn't shoot the guy.
I need is that. That's pretty neat.
There we go.
It's I don't know if it's neat, but anyway.
Wow, that'd be some good filming there, Mr. Soce.
It's not that.
See, I have nothing for this
movie.
All
right, we'll work on this. This will be our project. We'll work on mediocre
No,
soundtracks.
He doesn't get tortured, and the beaver's not Jewish. So
okay.
However.
I'll see it anyway.
All right, however.
See it anyway.
See it anyway.
There
okay,
we go.
That's not bad. Okay.
Thank you, Mike Perry.
Thank you. And thanks, Mel Gibson, for that matter.
Yep.
All right. Also on DVD and Blu-ray this week is Pariah, which was one of the award consideration screeners that we got at the end of the year.
Didn't get a lot of momentum, didn't get much of a release.
And it looked like it was in the same neighborhood as Precious. So that's a heavy-hearted neighborhood to live in.
And I have to admit, I read the summary of what it was about, and it's about, you know, a girl in an urban family who comes out, you know, sexually to her family. And
well, not right away.
Not right away, but and encounters all sorts of friction and complications when she does. And I just felt like, have I not seen that before? Is that
probably
really,
not?
Seems like a really great story, a really great movie to make in about 1992.
But not this inexpensive. Wow, you got that right. Not that inexpensive, very inexpensive, and a pretty good leading role by the young girl. But an African American girl coming out. I guess I don't think we've seen
there's an additional
that.
Cultural yeah,
right.
aspect
so,
there. But to me, this is one of those sort of movies where it's a movie that showcases filmmakers and stars for other films that people will actually see.
So there you go. But that's out as well. We got a couple of older titles. Boy, some of these, so, you know, some of these might be material for your column, I'm just saying. So we're going to start with, the 45th anniversary edition Blu-ray of Camelot.
Wow.
With Richard Harris, Vanessa Redgrave, and Franco Nero, and David Hemmings. So, but yes, this is where Letters to Juliet all began.
David Hemmings sing?
Sort of. Does Richard Harris sing?
Is this the musical version?
Yeah, the musical version. David Hemmings played Mordred. So... But remember, on Broadway, it was Richard Burton and Julie Andrews, and then it became Richard Harris and Vanessa Redgrave.
David Hemmings scares me.
David Hemmings is no longer with us.
I know,
so
you have nothing to worry about.
Those googly eyes. I don't know.
He had the great eyebrows near the end when he was, but he was kind of the guy, one of the British, not quite Oliver Reed, you know, maybe a smaller barbell, but he was one of the brooding young British actors of the 60s and 70s. So that's out, and because of the successful of the film version, Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy. The BBC miniseries with Alec Guinness is now out on Blu-ray, so you can
I'd
check out all.
I'd be interested to see that.
That'd be worth checking out again.
What, 6 hours, 8 hours?
Nine. Ooh. So, but that's worth checking out. And then there is, I have to maybe watch this over the weekend. I have the first film on Blu-ray. I actually found it. But there is a 5-film box set of the series Shogun Assassin. Now, the only reason why I remember Siskel and Ebert reviewing this on At the Movies, way back in the sneak preview days on PBS. But this is the samurai film. It's the guy, you know, the samurai warrior with his son in the baby carriage, and the baby carriage has blades shooting out of the wheels. Japanese grindhouse, I guess. But there's a box set of that out. And then there's two older 70s action films. And by the way, Kobe, 70s?
Different time.
But these are out from Olive Films. See if you remember this. Remember Badge 3 with Robert Duvall?
Ooh, just the name and the title. Just the title. That's about it.
Well, you might have to go find that one. And then I think 1973, I believe, directed by Sidney Fury. I think this was the one he did after Lady Sings the Blues. But a film called Hit with an exclamation point. Starring Billy Dee Williams and Richard Pryor.
Yeah, again, just I'm summoning visions of the poster in my head.
Yeah, it's Billy Dee with a bazooka and flames shooting behind him, which would be great to airbrush on a van if we had the film sociology van. Do we have enough pledge dollars to get the film sociology van? The film sociology mobile?
We need enough pledge dollars for a van. And then, like, 50 more bucks for some beer.
And pizza.
Yeah.
And then we can go. Yes, welcome to college radio, folks. But yeah, I think, and yeah, we need an airbrush of great 70s posters. So I think Hit should be on there, and we'll work on some others. But yeah, Billy Dee Williams plays a federal agent who's seeking revenge after his daughter dies of a heroin overdose. So he goes to Europe to go after the drug ring that supplied the heroin. And Richard Pryor's along for jokes and giggles. So, but yeah, 70s action films. Gotta love it. All right, we're going to take a short break, and we're going to catch up with Christopher Lloyd in the Film Yap. I have an archive series of film to talk about, and there's movies Kobe has that he really should watch and study.
Yeah, I want to watch these.
And you should make Fair Sweet Bianca watch them, too.
Okay.
You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org.
McLean, host of the Vinyl Cafe, and you're listening to Film Sociology on WFYI Indianapolis.
Thank you. Welcome back to Film Sociology. I'm your host, Matthew Soucy, along with Christopher Lloyd of the Film Yap and Kobe Slagle of many talents. And we want to thank everybody who pledged during the WFYI membership drive. Kobe, let me know if that request
you
pledge
know, I was
in.
Just thinking about that. I just remember that. I'm going to pull up the results right now.
And you think
and
somebody's going to be there thinking a falsehood
it's not
just
a
to
falsehood.
Get free food?
It is not a falsehood.
I see. All right, we'll work on that. So Chris Lloyd over at the Film Yap, how are things there?
Doing very good. You know, cranking along. Got a new podcast up with the summer movie preview.
Was that Wednesday's thing?
That's Wednesday.
Okay,
thing.
All right.
So make sure to head over there to get the lowdown on all the summer movies, because believe it or not, I know it's April, it's cold, but
gee,
as far as the movies goes, it's summer.
Yeah, it stops. And by the way, I'm looking out the window, and I see a couple of sharpshooters, but I know you saw a certain movie last night, but you can't discuss it.
The Avengers?
Yeah, you saw The Avengers.
I did see The Avengers.
Here's the thing. The screening was a trick. They actually showed you the Ralph Fiennes Uma Thurman film as a trick.
Yeah,
no.
Well, I'll use a trick from my friend, our friend.
Ed Johnsonot? Oh, the taco thing.
Yes.
How were the tacos?
He says, I can't talk about The Avengers, but afterwards I was eating a taco at my apartment. And now the taco took a little bit of time to after the first bite to kind of get into it, but it was only to add texture and flavor to the other bites of the taco.
I like tacos with red hair and tight leather pants, but that's just me. Now I know we were talking off air about your reeling series, and that goes into a question that was brought up. Kobe, do you have the AV club set up?
I had it.
Okay, well, no, this was a good subject. Of course, we love The Onion here at Film Sociology, the number one film source. Well, okay, not number one, but one of them. But every Friday they do a thing called...
A film source.
It's a real show, and it's pretty good.
Art that was nowhere near what you expected.
Art that was nowhere near you expected. So every week they ask a certain question about the arts, and then the editorial staff of the AV Club chimes in. And then there's like 1,000 responses from the interwebs. So, and the person who posed the question made as an example, Saturday Night Fever. The person who asked was going in expecting it to be like Grease and Footloose because everybody thinks of the disco scenes. But what she finds out is that it's actually, and I think it is, one of the best films about lost youth.
Yeah.
There's a reason why Gene Siskel bought the suit, of course. But it's about a guy who's stuck in a paint job. He's living at home. He's really just kind of a screw-up, a knucklehead. And the only time he does anything of value is on the dance floor. Of course, being a disco dancer doesn't pay the bills.
Yes. So the basic gist of the question is sort of like finding art where you didn't expect it, or you know, going into something not expecting much artistic achievement,
right?
And finding a lot greater depth in you. Yeah.
And I believe some of the answers, which we won't read because you go check out The Onion your own damn self, but Cabaret is on there.
Yeah.
I think The Iced Harvest, speaking of John Cusack, it's an Ivan Reitman film.
Oklahoma.
Yeah, there's that weird middle dream sequence. It's kind of like the Rape Ballet and the Fantastics of, whoa, wait a minute.
Yeah.
And of course, any musical with Rod Steiger, that should be a red flag for anybody. What else you got in there?
Let's see. Oh, crap. Lost it. The Private Life of Sherlock Holmes.
Ah, yeah. Billy Wilder. Remember the Billy Wilder film from the early 70s?
Metal Machine Music.
Oh, that's Lou Reed. That's a whole other chat. But one that immediately, most recently came to mind was I still will always remember when all of the Dewey White guys and Gina got to see Rise of the Planet of the Apes. It was August. We had just suffered through a long summer of
painful summer,
mindless action movies, and we're going to see something called Rise of the Planet of the Apes, which gave us thoughts of Sal Mineo and Paul Williams and John Huston and bad makeup. You know, well, not so bad makeup.
And what was really interesting was there was actually a lot of us there. It was a press screening.
It was.
It was just us.
Yep.
And a lot of us were there. And I don't know why. I mean, you know, since there were such low expectations, you would think
we did have low. I think that was like the only thing opening that week, which has been known to happen. We're all scurrying to something on Thursday, like, oh, it opens tomorrow, and it turns out to be what I remember saying, not a Planet of the Apes movie. There are apes in it, and the end winds up being the title. But I compared it to Awakenings. It's really about the scientist that's trying to help out his dad, who's suffering from Alzheimer's, played by John Lithgow.
For years. To people that the Robin Williams character is the main character in that, not Robert De Niro.
Yes, Bob's got the flashier performance, of course, but no, it's about the doctor who's trying to help things out, make things right. So that's really what the film is. And then some, you know, really fine Andy Serkis performing. So
yeah, so unexpected to see, as I put it, the movie of the summer of 2011 there at the end of the summer, you know, with this ridiculous title with, you know, not one but two clauses in it. You know, the Rise of the Planet of the Apes. Of the sequel of the Planet of the I had a good example was the Reeling Backward film that was featured in last week's column was an Errol Flynn World War II movie called Objective Burma.
I remember that.
With its own punctuation, Objective, comma, Burma, exclamation point.
Wow, lots of exclamation points.
1945, so made while came out while the war was still going on. And it started out as being just sort of a standard World War II buddy-buddy, bunch of swell guys at war, the familiar group of guys. You know,
the ones that are in Saving Private Ryan, which still bugs me.
The loudmouth from New York City, the tall Texan, the wholesome Midwesterner. I mean,
Errol Flynn.
And it really just thought it was going to be just this sort of, you know, fun and games propaganda World War II movies like there's so many of. And it ends up turning into this really gritty, for its time, fairly hardcore, lots of people die, World War II drama. So I was very – great example to answer that Onion question. A movie, based on its first 20 minutes, I was not expecting much of, and it really morphed into something better.
You've seen a lot of World War II films. I've noticed that. Been one that's intrigued you?
Well, it'd probably be more that I hadn't seen all that many. And so since I've been doing the Reeling Backward column, which is 2.5 years going on now, I've been doing it. It was two movies a week. I finally had to give up and succumb to real life and marriage.
Thanks,
and
family.
Being a father and a full-time job. And
see this column? This is what I do. See this column? I'd be writing this about this film if it weren't for you.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
So it's basically like, you know, so I watch at least one a week, one old movie a week, and write about it. And
Yeah, I've very much been drawn towards World War II movies, probably because I discovered a few early in the going that so impressed me that I hadn't heard of. And there's nothing more wonderful than finding a movie that you hadn't heard of that, you know, is a little bit of that undiscovered and country and finding that art.
40, 50, 60 years old.
Yeah. The one I'll mention is Battleground, a William A. Wellman film from 46 or 48, somewhere in there.
Mm-hmm.
For whatever reason, its reputation has not survived with the years. Fantastic A-plus World War II movie,
wow.
Battleground.
Okay. What are you gonna? Can you tell us the title that you're going to write about next without giving anything away?
I can, although I tend to work about a month ahead on the column.
Okay.
So, like, you know, right now, you know, like this week I was writing the one that's going to run like the third week of May. But we've got Somewhere in Time was the one that was featured this week.
Yes,
which,
right.
Which, as I wrote in the thing, was actually a mistake. I meant to watch Time After Time, but when I was queuing it up for Netflix, I got my titles mixed up in my head. So, as a makeup, I do Time After Time a few weeks later.
Which was shown in my film genre class at the Ball State University.
Yeah. But, yeah, so. I admit, I've been sort of – I get into these modes where I want to see, like, aviation movies. And
okay.
I want to see World War II movies. I just did another one. The subtitle was the Story of Carrier X, but it was a World War II movie about an aircraft carrier, and the name of it is fleeing through my head. I told you.
You told us about it. It's all right. Well, I because of the release of Hit starring Billy Dee Williams, and also the fact that sidebar, talking about MeTV, which I'm going to probably promote more than I probably should, but my daughter – what for the first time watched her first ever episode of The Honeymooners.
Huh.
And it was actually one of my favorites. It's where Ralph and Ed have the handy dandy kitchen helper and they do the commercial on live TV. And I remember watching this with my dad and just howling. And so that brings up of the segment that I like. This is my version of Reeling Back. But it's Into the Archive, where I find a film that you can only order online by Sony or Warner Brothers or Columbia or MGM. Or as Kobe likes to put it,
yeah, I'll burn it for like $5.
Only they burn you for 20. And this week I watched the 1977 biopic Scott Joplin, starring Billy Dee Williams. And even though he has the very special guest credit, Art Carney. And when you see the very special guest, it sounds like he's going to be in the film for 3 minutes. Well, he's actually in it quite a bit, but it is a standard biopic of the famous ragtime pianist and composer Scott Joplin, played by Williams, and his rise, guess what, rise and fall, and sort of semi-resurrection near the end. Or as my buddy Laura Jansen always reminds me, I don't like biopics. I hate biopics because they're movies about people. And what, of course, she's saying is that it follows the standard biopic arc. This is a Motown Films production. So Berry Gordy, I guess, produced this. It was put out by Universal. It was originally apparently supposed to be a TV movie, but you have Billy Dee Williams, Art Carney, and then there's one-off scenes with Seymour Cassell, Taj Mahal's in this, Slappy White, Mabel King, Margaret Avery. So, yeah, she did something before Color Purple. And really good music. And, of course, it was put out by Universal, who 4 years before got Gangbusters with The Sting. And, of course, music of Scott Joplin won an Academy Award in 1973.
Sting rules.
Sting does rule. Emma says so, too. So, anyway, but it's good to see, you know, Billy Dee Williams, of course, at the time was labeled Dark Gable because of Brian's song and Lady Sings the Blues. And, you know, he got to star in a biopic. It's nothing tremendous, but the music's good, and I'm a sucker to watch Taj Mahal in any film. So, all right, here's some words to live by.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Chris, thanks for hanging out with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you. My pleasure, as always.
Go to the Film Yap and go to your blog, which is?
CaptainCritic.blogspot.com.
Do you have a cape? You got a CC. You got that. And Kobe's got two movies to watch that hopefully he'll talk about next week. Thanks to everybody who pledged. Go see a good movie. You deserve it. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. Because I live in the state, yeah, go Pacers.
Go Pacers!
Go Pacers.
Good night, Fort Myers. We gone.
Ba-ba-ba-ba-ba.